Welcome back. You're listening to AM 800 WRTH broadcasting live. And thanks for tuning in. Before the break, we were talking to Deirdre in Halifax about the ghosts that haunt the warehouse she works in and their connections to the 1917 explosion. But before we light up the phone lines, I have something special for you all this evening. It's an email from Sean in Kentucky. I'm sure you remember him. We've spoken to him several times over the last few weeks, and he's been dealing with some incredible supernatural events at his house, a place called Tanglewood Hill. But it looks like we've got some good news out of central Kentucky, and he says, "Hello from Tanglewood Hill. I'm sorry I'm not calling in with this update, but I think I've monopolized enough of your time. But I thought you and your listeners might want an update on what happened when I finally confronted the spirits that reside in my house. When last we spoke, I called out Delilah and demanded she let Stephanie go outside and play. Never mind, it was pitch black outside. I figure it didn't matter now. I ran through the house. I was opening every door, shouting at Stephanie that it was okay. Go play. Go see your friend. The door to Stephanie's room slammed shut as I approached it, but I forced it open. I grabbed a chair from the desk in my office and I shoved the back of it under the knob. Running downstairs, I found my dogs at the window, barking at something outside. I pulled them away and locked them in the living room. I ran back to the back door and pulled it open, calling to Stephanie. I needed to be clear. I'm not mad at Delilah, but I could tell she was not happy with me. The doors were rattling upstairs, and I heard someone run down the hall above me. Footsteps on the stairs, light and quick. I felt something trying to shut the door I was holding on to. I turned to where I thought she might be. Damn it, Delilah. You're gone now. She's gone. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. What happened to you wasn't fair, and it's horrible, and I'm sorry. But Stephanie needs to be free, and there's a friend out there for her right now. Do you want her to be alone forever? I turned towards the dark of the forest and saw him out there in the muted light, streaming from my kitchen. I swear to God, he must have been 6 feet tall at the head. Eyes as green as summer leaves, glowing bright as the moon, he moved toward me, but for some reason, I wasn't scared. He snuffled a bit, you know, like any dog might if they're wondering what's going on. And then he raised his head and looked at something right behind me. I turned around, and there she was. She looked just as real as anything, as anyone. A beautiful little girl, her hair pulled back into a ponytail with a look of wonder on her face. She looked at me, and then outside, and that's when she saw him. Her face lit up, and the force that was trying to shut the door just stopped. I turned to where I thought Delilah might be again. You're going to be fine. She's going to be fine. You two are welcome here so long as you let her play. She's got a friend out there. He misses her something terrible. I looked back outside and I saw him come, and it was like the hoofbeats of a horse, yet not a single limb or branch moved as he ran through them. I threw my hands up and I said, whoa, wait a sec, big fella, but I didn't get to finish. He stopped right at the entrance of my kitchen and I felt a gentle breeze blow past me and out the door. Stephanie was gone, but I saw them both outside a second later, just beyond the first tree line. You could make out the massive floof sitting on the ground. Stephanie's arms were around his shoulders and his head was resting on hers. I caught movement out of the corner of my eye and looked back to the door I was holding. In the window, I saw Delilah reflected in the glass. And a soft voice whispered, "She's the happiest I ever saw her." "She's a good kid, and I meant what I said. You're both welcome here as long as you like." She smiled, nodded, walked away, fading away just before she left the kitchen. Everything went quiet again after that, and I stepped out onto the back walk at the edge of the forest. "Stephanie," I called out, "door's unlocked. Wipe your feet before you come back in, I guess." And I swear I heard a giggle from deep in the forest. That night I slept better than I ever had since I moved in. The dogs were settled, no weird noises, though I might have heard the kitchen door close at some point in the early morning. Who knows? The next morning I got up, made some coffee, and went upstairs to my office. I noticed the chair that I'd hooked under the guest door, that was gone. I found it back where it belonged. Sitting down to my desk, I moved my notepad out of the way and saw something written on it, in handwriting that wasn't mine. It was a simple message, but it brought tears to my eyes. I gently removed the page from the notebook and rummaged around in my closet to find a picture frame. I put it in that frame, and it's sitting on my desk now as I write this email. All it says is, "Thank you." It's signed with the single letter S. I put Stephanie's diary back where I found it, underneath the bottom bookshelf. That's not mine anyway. And before I left the room, I had a thought. I sharpened a pencil and wrote, "You're welcome," on the notepad. And I put it back in the center of my desk with the pencil on top. Maybe she'll have more to say later on. I suppose I'll find out soon enough. Thank you for everything. Thank you for listening, and thank you to your listeners. And take care. Sean, Tanglewood Hill, Kentucky. Well, Sean, everyone here at WRTH thanks you and wishes you the best. We'll go to the phones right after this message from our sponsors. Thanks for tuning in tonight. This is AM 800 WRTH. The place was lovely, but unassuming. An old house sitting alongside other old houses on a street in Franklin, Kentucky. Franklin, too, is old, founded in 1820 by the Kentucky legislature. The house itself was a little younger, built in 1912 in the grand style of the time. 5 bedrooms, 3 full bathrooms, almost 3,000 square feet sitting on a quarter of an acre. The price was obscene, but in a good way. As a family transplanting from the big city of Mesa, Arizona to the small towns of South Central Kentucky, we were stupefied by the differences in real estate values and prices. We could have sold our house in Mesa and bought something akin to a mansion in Franklin, Bowling Green, or Smith's Grove. Our real estate agent met us at the house, and we shook hands. He's a great guy and one hell of a realtor. We walked around the outside of the place, and I marveled at the architectural styling. The ground floor was stone, but the top floor was dark red brick, a burgundy contrast against the gray skies overhead. Stone columns adorned the front, holding up the roof over a porch, and from that hung a swinging bench. He let us in, and it was like wandering into a movie set. Beautiful, dark, hardwood floors ambled throughout the ground floor, with a grand staircase leading to the upper level. As we entered, our realtor said that the place had been vacant for 6 months or so. I stopped at the doorway for an instant behind everyone else. I looked around, past doorways and rooms, into alcoves and corners. This place might be vacant, but it's not empty. I kept my thoughts and feelings to myself. I'm not psychic, but I can be sensitive. And I don't always pick up on these things, but this one, he's there. Somewhere just beyond the last room I can see, near the back. As we look around the place, I followed my intuitions. I don't want to chase him, which sounds strange for someone with an interest in the paranormal. This one, he's not dangerous. No, He's curious. He's not a child, but he's not old. He's shy, that's for sure. Because everywhere I went, he made sure he wasn't there. I didn't get a sensation he was running. More that he just didn't know what to do. I do most of the cooking for the family, and I thought the kitchen was fantastic. Plenty of workspaces, separate island countertop in the middle, and ample storage. Built-in shelving and hutches offer the perfect places to keep our plates and knickknacks, and many of the rooms had fireplaces. The other rooms on the ground floor were excellent for dining, music, entertaining, and just living. As I walked around, I was mentally placing my furniture around the house and sizing up how it might all fit together. I stayed silent about what I was picking up because there's no need to get weird in front of the realtor. While my wife can put up with my oddities, I didn't want to bug her with this unless I felt I needed to. From another room, I heard a door open, the flick of the switch, and my wife's voice. "Well, that's creepy," she said in the same matter-of-fact tone you might use when discussing the weather. I walked over to her and found her looking down a staircase at the bare earth of an unfinished basement. Study the paranormal long enough and you pick up on certain ideas, tropes, and beliefs. A common thread among many ghost stories and investigations is the idea that the bare earth, the raw ground itself, can harbor the emotions of the past. It's akin to the stone tape theory in that the sensations and events of the past might be imbued into the rocks and the ground itself, and these impressions might be replayed later on in the form of residual hauntings. For those unfamiliar, a residual haunting is something like a playback from the past. Often it revolves around powerful, intense emotions, both good and bad. There's no intelligence to a residual haunting, just like there's no intelligence to a Blu-ray movie. When you play the movie plays the same today as it did yesterday. A residual event is similar in that you'll often experience the same thing in the same place over and over again. For instance, in Tombstone, Arizona, in the lower level of the Birdcage Theater, you'll find two or three card tables. At night, you can often hear the sounds of conversation, music, and people playing cards. They're partying into the night and they're having a great time, but those are just impressions, and the impressions remain. Likewise, there are abandoned prisons where one can still hear the wailing of prisoners in pain, perhaps replaying their screams of death as they were murdered by other inmates. I led the way down the stairs. Strangely, I felt nothing in the basement, though there was a gigantic cast iron boiler from when the house was originally built. This boiler could have easily weighed more than the rental car we parked outside, as it was taller than I am. It was a magnificent piece of work, and I ran my fingers along it before walking back up the stairs. At the top, I caught movement out of the corner of my eye, but there was nothing to be seen when I followed it. My wife doesn't carry the same sensitivity I do. So I think her opinion of the basement was similar to her opinion of a deserted parking garage. It's a dark, out-of-the-way place. Naturally, that can be a bit creepy. After a check of the ground floor, and general agreement that this place was awesome, we headed upstairs. The bedrooms were located on the second floor, and they were all well-designed, expertly laid out. Some had built-in bookcases, and I, as a librarian, fell in love with those. We rounded the corner out of a small hallway into a larger room, and found our realtor standing next to an open door, with darkness beyond. The look on his face wasn't fear, but it was definitely concern. "I'm not going up there unless y'all go first," he said, jerking his head towards the door. I walked over and looked inside and found another staircase. To my delight, it went upstairs to a full attic. It was something I'd always wanted but never had access to. All the places I've lived before, they simply don't build houses with a usable attic. Before anyone could see anything, I was bounding up the stairs two at a time, and at the top, where no one could hear me, I apologized to the spirit that lived there, because as soon as I entered the attic itself, I knew that this was his room. He liked to look out the windows and see what was going on outside. I'd bet anything there'd be a story or two in the neighborhood about people seeing strange shadows in the attic windows of this house. At that moment, things became clear. And I was certain he was male, was not dangerous. He'd been there for quite some time, and he didn't mind people in the house, but no, he was confused. For a brief moment, he offered me an insight. There was a family there, and then they left. Where did they go? What happened? He was feeling a little lonely. I smiled to myself as I wandered over to the window, looking outside, as I'm sure he does. Turning towards the stairs, I saw that no one had followed me up. Our realtor wasn't coming up unless he had to, and my wife was content to stay down on that upper level. I leaned against the window and spoke in a voice just above a whisper. "I don't know, and I'm sorry. We're new here too, leaving our place and finding somewhere new to live. Look, I don't know if we'll move into this house, but I do think it's a beautiful place. I can see why you enjoy it. Either way, don't worry, my friend. There will be a family who comes along soon enough. No way a place this wonderful stands empty for long." I walked back to the stairs, turning one more time to the window. I didn't see anything. Instead, I just kind of felt it. He was there. And I smiled again. "Take care. Maybe see you again sometime," I said, and descended the stairs. We left a few moments later, and as we climbed into the car, my wife was going on about how it wasn't perfect, but it was excellent, and it was the top of the list. It was then I told her, "Look, you'll be fine there, but you'll rarely be alone." I let her know what I had felt, the sensations and the visions. I let her know that he wasn't bad, but he was there, and she needed to be okay with that. After some thought, she decided she was okay with it. With him. We didn't wind up buying that house, and I feel a small pang of regret when I think about it. There wasn't anything wrong with the place other than where it sits. The drive from her job back to Franklin was along a twisting road that could get dark, icy, and dangerous in the winter. Real estate is all about three things, they say. Location, location, and location. We decided instead to live in Bowling Green, in a house located near the northeast border of the town, out on the edge of the woods, where you can hear the birds in the morning and the tree frogs at night, where squirrels busy themselves throughout the day with the tasks of finding nuts in the yard, and a barred owl rules her nocturnal domain when the moon rises over the trees. And if you leave the house through the back door, you'll find yourself walking uphill and into the heart of a tanglewood forest. Thank you for tuning in tonight. This is AM 800 WRTH. Have a happy Halloween. And a blessed Samhain. Good night.